Don't you love Fridays? I mean, we're not going to play that Friday song because I know that will make everyone very unhappy. But the market is up so far. We got a lot of good earnings reports. And then what's tomorrow? The Kentucky Derby. I got my American Pharoah shirt on because I think there might be another Triple Crown winner. We'll cover that at 9 o'clock. There's something else happened on May 4th a long time ago. We'll let you guys guess that. Cinco de Mayo on Sunday. You guys better be in good shape when you come here on Cinco de Mayo on Sunday. You guys be in good shape on whatever you do on that day. Mee Snyder, 835. Jobs number 830. Man, jam-packed show today. Let's get pre-market prep started.
Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, starting out firmly in the green here. Haven't even seen that closing price. Apple, we exploded to the upside. We're up 16 and three quarters handles, 51.08 and a quarter, but what happens at 8:30? I can't control with that jobs number. The buck down 13 cents at 104.10504. TLT flat. I'm sure we'll get a move off that. Crude trying to get back into the 80 handle, up 42 cents at 79.37. Quite weak for gold, down 320, 23.0640. Silver, Lincoln, down 14.4 cents at 26.680. Bitcoin futures, they're in the red, $175 at 59,590. Let's bring in Triple D. And Triple D, are things as really green as they're looking right now on the screen?
Never as green as they're looking on the screen, especially when you just look at S&P. You got to look around. I always like looking at the IWM as well. So on your screen, Qs, SPY, IWM, never DIA. Never even look at it. Doesn't even cross my mind to look at it. I have no idea if the Dow is at 20,000 or 100,000. I have no idea. I probably do have an idea because they talk about it on CNBC. It's at 38,000. But if I was in my trading screens, if I just looked at my trading screens, I would have no idea where the Dow is. I never, ever look at it, a useless indice. But I do know exactly where the IWM always is and the S&P and the Qs. Those are the three you're looking at. If you're looking at the Qs, you're seeing a big pop thanks to Apple. If you're looking at the SPY, you're seeing a big pop thanks to Apple. If you're looking at the IWM, it's down because there's no Apple in there. It's all about Apple today.
Yeah, start with the A's. Let's bring in AB on a Friday. How you doing, buddy?
I am good. How we doing out there, Zinger Nation? Joel, Dennis, good morning. And yeah, I saw Jay Rice in the chat was saying I should have bought Apple calls instead of DraftKings. I was actually looking, if you, I did a show yesterday afternoon because we had a special guest, and I was talking about Apple calls, and I was looking at them. My thesis was just that the bar was low. I didn't end up pulling the trigger on them, but I don't think the calls that I was kicking myself yesterday afternoon when Apple was trading above 185, but now that it's coming down a little bit, I don't think those calls really would have worked out that well anyway. Probably still open higher this morning, but not.
What were you looking at, AB?
Looking at 185 calls, and they were like 30 cents when I was looking at them, and then Apple was actually trading above 185 for a while, so that was like, they probably would have opened at around like $2 or something had Apple stayed above 185, but it's come down a little bit. But let's get
Who was your special guest?
It was Bill Capuzzi from Apex FinTech. They do like the back end for a lot of the retail brokerages and stuff. So we were talking about like the investing trends of retail investors, what people are you know, how their behaviors have shifted since COVID and all this stuff. So what's interesting, he was talking about option trading has actually increased it's higher now than it was in 2020, which is surprising to me. But yeah.
Do you ever look at any spreads on that? You know, like,
yeah, I was talking about the Apple thing, I was saying like, I would be, you know, looking at some like debit put spread, because I just didn't think it was going to go that far down. Like it had Apple. So let's get into the numbers, because Apple's numbers actually weren't that great.
You got it.
The revenue. So Apple reports EPS of $1.53, beat the $1.50 estimate. Sales came in at $90.8 billion, beat the $90.1 billion estimate. And revenue actually decreased quarter over quarter, was lower than it was this quarter last year. It got a bump up the previous quarter, so it kind of broke this streak of lower revenue in the last quarter that it reported. But this one, it went back to being lower revenue. You know, we've talked about how there's been weaker iPhone demand, but then the company raised its dividend and authorized an additional $110 billion buyback, the biggest buyback ever announced by a company. And if you got a little bit of declining revenue, but then you announce a huge buyback, you're going to get this boost. But the question is everything really good under the hood, or is this just a temporary fix? You know, and I'm the king of that, right? I'll drive around with like duct tape on my headlight or something to avoid going to get it actually fixed. So that's what it feels like to me, is throwing some duct tape on there to make it look better than it was. But again, the numbers under the hood, not great for Apple, but the buyback and the dividend raise enough to keep the stock higher this morning.
The buyback is the biggest buyback in the history of the stock market. We've never seen a $110 billion buyback. And Apple has a trouble right now on the top line. We know they haven't been growing revenues. The only way they can grow EPS when you're not growing revenues is to shrink the share count. And that's exactly what they're doing. So bring the S down. So, I mean, a lot of this Apple move in the last 5 years has all been driven by buybacks, bringing that share count down. The share count's to come down substantially. Obviously, it's a cash cow. They have the luxury to do that. People still buy their phones. My wife just bought an Apple iPhone 15. I mean, you know, so that's not going away. People will continue to upgrade and buy the phones. So the cash cow is there. How they grow from here, how they grow revenue is a question. I don't know if Cook's got the answers for that, but he sure has the answers to keep the stock price up, to find what you call, Joel, financial engineering, raise the dividend, do a huge buyback. Everybody will forget that this quarter wasn't that great.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. I mean, look at this company. I mean, look at all the revenue beats. Now, I know it was down from the last quarter, but it, you know what? It was up from the two prior quarters there. So, I mean, they make a lot of money, you know?
Bring those numbers up closer. This is just an excellent thing to look at here. You know, those numbers every single year look pretty much the same. You got the little bump, you obviously in the fourth quarter there. But if you just look, you know, year over year, there's no growth here, folks. There's no growth in revenue. Apple is not growing. I mean, you're paying 28 times multiple for a stock that's not growing. Now, again, they just continue to buy back the shares until there's no shares outstanding, and then it hasn't, you know, obviously. But it's a joke. But, I mean, there's no growth here. They got to figure it out. They ask Tim Cook on the call multiple times about, you know, AI products. He just, you know, basically just says, yeah, we got some good stuff coming. No hints. Apple, again, even if they have good stuff coming, they never let you know. They don't want competitors to have an edge. They never let you know what's cooking. So maybe he is cooking. Well, it's going to be a lot of puns on cooking today. Yep. Maybe he's cooking something up. But it's just like, what have they given us since the iPhone? What product? You know, iPad.
I mean, okay. You know what it comes down
to? Watch.
I was remember one of I don't have my watch on today. But, you know, what they got the numbers. They got the people. You know, the next iPhone cycle, I mean, they got the subscriptions. They got the masses. It's just like
they don't have the alarm clocks though anymore.
Oh, we know about the alarm clock. We know about
did it work today?
Clock. It did.
You're here.
It's been working. Wait,
you have a backup now?
Yeah. I got a physical alarm clock.
He actually went out to, you know, the dollar store and went and picked up a $2 alarm clock. So he's got a physical one. That one works all the time. $1,500 Apple iPhone.
Before we move on, and we're being fundamental here, Dennis, and you're talking about earnings growth and everything, and you know you have no position in Apple because of the earnings growth, but you have a full position in Tesla.
Well, it's not the earnings growth; revenue growth is what I'm concerned about. They can grow; they're going to grow earnings because they're going to keep buying back stocks. So that's the way they do it. You grow that EPS by, you know, so it's the revenue growth that I'm concerned about. Apple is such a monster. It's a monumental task to try to grow a $3 trillion company. It's a monumental task to try to do that. They're just so big. Nothing moves the needle when you're that big. So it's difficult. You've got to have a game changer where everybody in the world's got to buy this product. I mean, everybody in the world's got an iPhone or, you know, some type of, you know, cellular phone. A lot of people obviously have iPhones. So you've got to find something else. What's that going to be? You know, it's not going to be the Vision Pro. So that's where, you know, where is this growth
I just want to juxtapose this against your Tesla. You're in Tesla. You're in a full position. You're looking for revenue growth. I mean, you know, so you think that the driver is the full self-driving, and that's the thing that's going to
I think there's so many future products for Tesla. Okay. And was I on this show, or was it your show that I disclosed I did sell? On Twitter yesterday, I did sell, disclose. I sold half the position. You guys all spooked me out on Tesla. So I basically lost $2 on the extra size position, sold the rest of it 181. But I'm still in, not a full size. It's a little less than a full size position now. I sold the same shares that I bought. I bought at 185, and I think I sold at 181 because you guys all, Joel made the best arguments about Tesla. And you know what? You are paying extreme valuation. But I'll tell you, Tesla is a lot more cooking up than Apple right now. You know, full self-drive. I don't know the date when it's coming, but it's coming. You know, obviously working on humanoids. Like, the vision, you know, like, just imagine, you know, like, you think about Tesla, you know, like, who, okay, let's compare.
Okay.
Let's stop and compare Musk to Jobs. Let's do that comparison. I mean, you think about how we've been saying Apple hasn't had a lot of innovation since Jobs has been gone, and it's true. I mean, their stock price has done well, but buybacks have driven that, and valuation expansion, multiple expansion has driven that growth in the stock. And, you know, sure, iPhones have expanded and revenue has expanded, but, you know, what cool new innovations. I mean, Tesla has went a long ways. We were talking about this when we started the show 10 years ago. They were building cars in a tent, Joel, and everybody had Tesla Q. All you heard about was Tesla Q and the stock's going to go bankrupt. You know, now, you know, look at SpaceX. You know, NASA was the only one. SpaceX is doing everything now. You know, they basically took over like they're doing NASA's job. I mean, the stuff that he's accomplished is unbelievable. If I was going to bet on Cook or Musk, I would bet on Musk every day. Every day from an innovative standpoint.
I do think, too, if Tesla comes in more, like, I think at a certain point, it's attractive from the standpoint of its, like, energy storage business down the road. Like, I think that alone could be as big as its car, you know, valuation is now. But I think all this stuff is just further down the road. So, again, like, I'd be interested in Tesla if it comes back down closer to that $100 level is where I'd be looking
at. The world will be over by then. But you know what?
People hate Musk. Too. Like, I want to go back to the Musk too, because I'm not finished my point here. I don't want to move away from it yet. People absolutely hate this guy. They hate this guy. They want this guy to fail. They need this guy to fail. They hate this guy. I mean, when you're saying, and they're saying, oh, people are tweeting at me, he's a con artist. He's a fraud. He hasn't accomplished anything. Are you crazy?
I don't know.
The stuff that he's, like him or hate him as a person, take away all of that. Look at the accomplishments are absolutely unbelievable from PayPal. I mean, Starlink. Look at what he's done with that. We don't even talk about that. You know, like they're talking in the internet. You know, the EV, like think about like all those car companies that have been making cars for 100 years. And he became the leader by making cars in a tent. Took it from nothing to there. I mean, you know, and then he's working on full self-driving. Don't kid yourself. He's getting there. When you see Waymo's there, he's getting there. And then, you know, the humanoid aspect, you say, oh, there's a couple of robots, who gives a crap? You know, it was stupid, you know, robots. You know what, folks? It's going to come. These humanoids are coming. Is Tesla going to be a major player? You're damn right they're going to be a major player. Are they going to be the player? There'll be competition. NVIDIA's going to be there too. But just to say that Musk has accomplished nothing and he's a con artist is absolutely ignorant. It's just not looking
all right,
at
AB,
what
take,
he's done.
Take control. Take control, AB.
Well, let's move on. We've got a bunch of other earnings to get to. I did want to, I saw this comment in the chat. We're going to get to Amgen real quick. I'll read those numbers. But Pulverizer in the chat was saying buybacks at these prices hoses the shareholders. And like, that's my one thing with Apple right now is if this AI opportunity is as big as like everyone's making it out to be, wouldn't you rather see the company like spend this $110 billion like going back into R&D, helping the company grow rather than just saying, hey, we're going to like boost the share prices in the short term? I mean, I know a lot of people that are against buybacks in general for that reason, because the companies aren't then reinvesting back in themselves. I mean, are you guys fans of buybacks like Buffett is, or do you think it'd be better for the companies to spend that money internally?
I don't think Apple knows what to do with the money. I think they're doing a $110 billion buyback because they don't have stuff cooking up.
Right. That's what I'm worried about.
I would love Apple to not do the $110 billion and put $110 billion in AI. Like, let's go. You know, but you know what? They don't know what they're doing there. I'm calling it right now. Apple doesn't have as much cooking up as they need to have cooking up. So lots of puns there today. But, you know, take that for what, you know, the stock probably going to continue to go higher. They're going to continue to buy back. iPhones aren't going away. It's a cash cow. But they don't have a hell of a lot of new stuff cooking up here. The Vision Pro, an absolute flop. Very disappointed. I bought the stock on it. I thought it was going to be awesome. And you know what? Giving people headaches and stuff. They've worked on that nonstop. They scrapped the car. They work on the car for 5 years. They scrapped it. They're all over the place. And all of today, this buyback, all it does is cover up the fact that Apple doesn't know how to grow. They don't know how to grow.
Pre-market high, 186.65. And right now you have sellers congregating at 184. People trying to wiggle out of those calls that they bought. I mean, this, to me, I'm not chasing this 184 up to 186 and change at pre-market high. I mean, I think you look for sellers into that little bit above the expected move. Let's stick with the A's. Amgen,
real quick. Amgen reported earnings $3.96 a share, beat by 5 cents, revenue of $7.45 billion. In line, the company gave some news about its weight loss drug. It's injectable. Sounds like it's got some benefits compared to the others on the market. The stock or the market really liked that. The company tweaked its guidance and the stock is up 13%. Now, the company did say it was also scrapping its plans for its weight loss pill. So that was interesting because that was actually something that boosted the stock earlier when they came out with data based on its pill. So they're basically saying, like, look, our injectable is working so well right now, and we're getting such positive data from this injectable one that we're done with the pill. So that was the one thing I was like, oh, that's interesting, because that, you know, did boost the stock earlier when it was talking about the pill versus the injectable. But either way, the stock, the market is eating up that weight loss drug story, you know, hit that 315 way outside the expected move here. So if you were trading Amgen options, buying calls, you're looking pretty good this morning.
And again, the calls, I think 280s were just going for just over $6. The stock traded down on the initial numbers because it's, you know, valuation, it's cheap as hell, but they just don't care about value stocks here. They want growth. They want to hear the story. This market is really so hot for a story. So the stock was trading down for like a good hour, and then the conference call happened, and then they started talking. To your point, they're scrapping the pill, and they're like, oh crap, scrapping the pill. But then they start talking about their injectable data, and it's really, really good. And the market just started buying it, and they could not stop buying it on this. And Joel, you'll see it on the charts where they just ripped it. So this was not on the initial report. It traded down for a good half hour to an hour. It was on the conference call when they started talking about the injectable data and saying, you know, it was so good. And obviously, and I think their injectable is going to be less frequent than Lilly's is as well. So I've argued this as being an obesity drug play for the whole year, you know, for the last 6 months. I bought the stock back in December because I felt like this is going to be an obesity drug play. It's been just not given any valuation for that whatsoever. Like the core, you know, this thing's trading 13 times earnings. It's trading like it doesn't even have a drug cooking on there at all. And now, you know, all of a sudden everybody wakes up and it's like, it's up $36. Like, oh man, Amgen's going to be a player. I mean, we've been saying this on the show. It was in NASA, my acronym, because I said it's going to be a player. I don't know, like, you know, now it's pop. You want to chase it here? Probably not. But people will forget again. That's what this market does. So maybe, you know, you use a pullback if it starts to leak to actually get up in the position of this. I'm long this stock. I stay long this stock. The valuation is ridiculously attractive. They're giving no value really to that obesity drug. And you know what? If they're going to pay 56 times for Eli Lilly, And yep. Amgen can come out with a competing product. Think about the multiple expansion that could happen here. And then if they grow earnings on top of it, if they do get this drug to market, and then they're talking about, you know, talking about it working for diabetes. They're saying a lot of good things. There's a lot of potential here, folks. And the valuation is there actually very attractive. I love this stock.
Let's rip through this real quick. Amgen getting a big pop here. The reason I put these question marks here is because you're right in the vicinity of the all-time high. All-time high comes in at 329.72. You haven't got over 320 yet. You're $6 away. I mean, once again, if you're sitting on some weeklies or even monthlies here, I expect things to thicken up between 315 and 320. Not chasing it here. Don't know when it's ever going to come back down to fill the gap, but you got to take note here. Lilly shareholders, take note here. You're wondering why your stock's down $11. Well, there's the reason. But and red candle, flat candle in April, or working on a red candle in May. NVO, same thing here, trading in the red. VKTX shareholders, this isn't what you want to hear if you are owner. You don't want competition, especially like a company like Amgen. I like this one, Dennis. I'm gonna hop on the Dennis train there. Hopefully we get a little bit of a pullback, but I like the valuation.
I think you're buying. I don't think you're chasing it here today, but this is I'd put it on my shopping list if you don't own it. I looked at my average cost is 297. I'm in from this, and it's been a terrible stock for me all year. It's been the one stock in my acronym that I'm down in. Got down to 261, 262, and I was looking at it just thinking, man, that was not a good pick, but I'm still a believer in that story. And then just like that, boom, they start talking about it. The market thinks about it, and the stock's, you know, up at 314. Yeah, great point. Lilly getting hit on this data here. Obviously, competition is not what they want. They're paying 56 times earnings for this drug. So all of a sudden, it's another player. It's not good news. NVO was down yesterday on their earnings and now down again overnight, obviously trading over in Europe actively. And then Viking Therapeutics. I mean, you know, you think about VKTX, smaller company. Obviously, they're working on one here too. But, you know, they don't want more competition in the space either. So it's not surprising that those players are down. I'm still long Viking. I still think Viking could get bought by one of the other majors. If Viking gets this to stage three, you know, their drug, the valuations are so attractive here. I think there could be a major player just comes in and scoops them up. So I still think Viking is a takeout candidate. So
Amgen,
I'm not
Amgen
selling Viking.
Too. Amgen, they got other things.
I don't think Amgen would have been a buyer if their other drugs weren't working so well, but they've got everything that they're working on here. So I don't see Amgen as the acquirer. But what about Pfizer? You know, that's, you know, just been sitting back and looking for, you know, to get involved. Why not come in here and buy a Viking Therapeutics and just get right in the game? You know, like you're trying to find your way after COVID, Pfizer. And the stock has just been absolutely terrible. I'm long Pfizer. It's been a very bad call by me. It's popped up the last couple of days, but, you know, it's definitely bad stock. Why not? You know, you got some cash. Come on in here. Get involved in the
little
weight
dividend,
loss game.
Little dividend.
It's been Bristol Myers or somebody. I don't know if they want to get into this, but these stocks are in the gutter. They need a story here. I mean, you could just grab this story and run with it and maybe be a player. You know, I would actually think VKTX is an attractive candidate for a lot. And I do think eventually it could get bought.
Yeah, stage two. A lot of ballyhoo over stage two. I mean,
it's early.
I ain't no bioscientist or whatever, but, you know, a lot of things can happen, you know, stage two, stage three, whatnot. Okay, 823, we're rolling along here. We've covered 3-4 stocks so far. Keep us going, AB.
Yeah, let's go ahead and keep the earnings train rolling. We had a couple crypto companies, or at least companies with crypto, you know, parts of their business report last night. Let's start with Block, formerly Square. Mm-hmm. Getting a bounce here, trading up 7% after the company reported some strong earnings and gave updates on its kind of Bitcoin side of the business. EPS came in at 85 cents, beat by 12 cents. Revenue came in at 5.96 billion, beat by 140 million. You know, I mean, again, like they, I think a lot of what they were talking about when it comes to the Bitcoin part of their business, people were liking, they raised their guidance for the rest of 2024. So good news on Square. We talked about how this one and PayPal have been kind of beating up stocks heading into it. You had some analysts come in this morning. Needham raises price target to 105. Baird maintains outperform on Block, raises price target to 100. So that's some nice premium there from $75 where the stock is currently trading at.
It's a big pop for the stock. Yeah, and the stock is just not getting love, though. So this isn't the stock I would buy and chase on a pop. It's the stock I would take profits on the pop. Same thing as PayPal. We talked about PayPal on this show correctly. Called this one. It was up $3-4 bucks, and I'm like, the stock is just one that pops and drops, and it did it again. Square is kind of the same thing. I don't know if it's going to do it, you know, give it all back. It's been holding it here, but you can't chase in this. One, you can't chase in this market, and two, know the stocks you can chase on and you can't chase on. You can never chase on PayPal. The stock is just absolutely hated. Square is really not one to chase on either. Look at, you know, where it is. You call it the accordion chart here, Joel. It's going up and down, left and right, and just kind of going nowhere for years. I mean, where are we? And obviously downtrend overall, but for the last 2 years, we just sit here and shop around. You think, oh yeah, this is Square's time. It goes 65, 85. No, back to 65. So if you're buying this on pops, you've been doing it wrong. You're opening up into resistance here. 75 looks like major resistance to me, not chasing Square.
Yeah, I like 75 as a key level too here, just because you bumped your head up against it several times. You broke out, at least in the pre-market trading. I'd keep an eye on just going off the PayPal scenario. 78.39 to pre-market high. Bulls have to prove they've been doing a pretty good job in all of the after hours in the pre-market so far, showing a 75 bid. So that bid has to sustain here. Next daily high comes in. Wow, a ways up there. That's 76.30. Keep an eye on that. That is your four-day high for shares of Square. 4 minutes left here. We got jobs coming. It's scary.
We got jobs coming at 8:30. We'll make sure to have those numbers for you. Before jobs, let's keep it in the crypto space. Let's go to Coinbase real quick. Coinbase, I mean, if you guys think about the first 3 months of this year, that is when that rally in Bitcoin happened, you know, basically back up through all-time highs. Crypto was as hot as it's been really in the past like 3 years. But the market knows that. Like, that's the expectation, is that, you know, they know that that quarter is expected to be very strong for Coinbase. Let's get into the numbers real quick here. EPS came in at $4.40, beat by $3.33. Revenue of $1.64 billion, beat by $300 million. So again, like, the numbers themselves look very strong, but the expectations were set very high because of crypto's price action in that quarter. Let's see if they updated guidance or anything. Yeah, so they kind of gave a cautious Q2 outlook. And I talked about this yesterday on my afternoon show, because Coinbase themselves, they don't know where Bitcoin's going, right? They can't say, oh yeah, you know, trading volume is going to pick up in the next 3 months because Bitcoin's going to start rallying again. They don't know. So they have to, I felt like they had to be kind of cautious on the call, because again, like, Bitcoin's now sold off a little bit. I'm sure the first month of the quarter hasn't been as hot as it was the previous quarter. So either way, Coinbase trading lower this morning on good numbers. If you're wondering why.
Quick technical here. Good resistance at 240, and you did get a pop up off that, off the number. And then now I look at just under 200, 198 to 200. This is really no man's land here. It's 828. Dennis, I know you're getting ready to go. I see Mish in the background. Mish, do you want to come on for the number?
Yeah, bring in
here?
Mish, and I'm going to go to the background.
Okay.
We're gonna trade. Right. Dennis, we're doing a trade. It's Dennis for Mish. I think that.
Hi, Mish. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. So you. I don't think, have you been on with me during a number? Have you been on with me for an economic number? You're gonna think you're right down at. Where were you at, the NYMEX or
for part of the time? Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the only time I go to my 1 minute chart, because 1 minute charts make me nervous. I just don't. And tick charts even make me more nervous. So I go to the 1 minute, and we're coming up AB. Why don't you give us a 15-second preview here of the number?
Preview of the number, we're looking for a U.S. unemployment rate of 3.8%. That would be unchanged from the March report of 3.8%. We're looking for 240,000 jobs. That's against 300,000 the previous month. U.S. hourly wages are expected to maintain at 0.3%. There you go. There's your 15-second preview.
Okay, the algo jumpers are jumping their algos. They're removing their bids and offers. Little small move up. Haven't taken out the pre-market high yet. Pre-market high is 51.18. 26.75 is your number on the upside. And We're going to be there. We are past there. We're coming in with a good number here, folks. The market is loving this number, whatever the hell it is. It must be in line or soft. What do you got? Nice pop.
U.S. unemployment rate for April, 3.9% versus 3.8% estimated. The hourly earnings for April, 0.2% versus the 0.3%. So 0.2 versus 0.3 on hourly wages. That's good news for inflation. Unemployment rate actually ticking higher to 3.9%. U.S. unemployment rate for April, U6. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's a typo. Unemployment rate for April, 7.4% versus 7.3% prior. So maybe some signs the labor market's cooling down. I think more importantly, you're seeing that wage growth come in a little bit lighter than the market was expecting, which again, usually trickles down to meaning that, you know, people are spending less money, which can help inflation. So nothing crazy in terms of the misses or how light it came in. But I think just the fact that it is coming in slightly light, the market is loving right now.
All right, just real quick, we are back at the highs for the week, folks. Just like that, our high on Monday was 51.48.50. You know what happened on Tuesday and Wednesday after that. So I'm gonna look for another resistance level. I'm gonna go back to a normal chart, and let's be sure to hear. We did a lot of talking. Is this what Mr. Powell wants?
Well, it's certainly in the right direction. And he said this week exactly what the market needed to hear was that he may not necessarily raise the rates, but his next move would most likely be to lower the rates. And so that's why we've gotten the rally over the last couple of days. And now today's jobs number, clearly, at least the initial reaction is, okay, that means that Powell can actually go ahead with all of that. And there's also been talk about Operation Twist, which is something we haven't really seen in a long, long time. It was in 2008, 2009. And that's where they decrease the yields at a faster rate on the long end than they do on the short end, but it doesn't mean that they have to raise the rates. So in essence, what they do is they flatten out the curve. And it's a good way, or at least it was effective after the big crash in 2008, to stabilize the economy. And the only negative part of that, of course, would be the high interest rate that we're paying for debt right now, or that they're paying for the government debt, which of course continues to go up. Will that help? Maybe not, but at least for the short term, that twist is something I think that's being tossed around, and clearly today would help that happen.
All right. Well, that's a great breakdown of it. Bad news, good news scenario here. Folks, keep an eye on that 48.50. That was Monday's high. We did get to 50.75, so that was actually the top number I have. That's what I'll be focusing on. So we exchanged some notes, and we've been talking the whole week how, man, if you ain't fading, you ain't trading. And you've had some quick drops, and earlier in the week put a double bottom in on Wednesday and Thursday. You've had some quick pops here, and they've been faded too. Sell in May or just chop around in May. And if you're into selling rips, we're kind of looking at one right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's certainly, we don't really know yet whether chop's going to be the ticket for May. And I think you have to really look at the market individually. And that's really been helpful when you do that. So that always brings me, Joel, back to my Modern Family, right? So I know you're watching the SPY and the SPX, but of course, we're always focused on the Russells. And what's so interesting about the Russells right now is that the last couple of days, they got to 200. Well, it was last week. And then again, yesterday, they got close to 200 in the IWM and stalled. So I think that we may still be range bound, but over 200 in the Russell means that we could see a nice pop back to at least test their highs, which was around 210. And then we'll see what happens from there. Of course, any kind of relaxation of the yields would help the small caps in particular, right? Because so many of those stocks have gotten hammered with higher interest rates and higher inflation, so higher costs. And that's kind of what I'm looking at all of the sectors. The other one, of course, it's really important to me right now. Granny retail is always important. And we saw a terrible consumer confidence, but yet that whole sector held key support. But it's transportation that was selling off in the face of the rally, and now also managed to find some major support on the weekly chart over 63.30. And if it gets back over 67 in IYT, I think that would be hard to argue with. And we can't forget we're in an election year. So regardless of everything's going on, I think the Fed made their decision. They're not going to worry so much about inflation. And they're going to be more worried about the potential of recession, especially after today. And that could actually help some of these sectors that have been underperforming.
Speaking about, you know, looking at the market individually, what about what's going on in the semiconductor industry right now? You had SMCI and AMD report this week, which caused a lot of those stocks to kind of be pulled in a little bit. Do you think this is a bubble bursting or a buying opportunity?
You know, it's very possible it could be neither. It could be that the whole semiconductor space is trying to find its legitimate value. And I think the best analogy to that would be what happened with electric cars. You know, we know that EVs went nuts. They were all the rage. You know, at one point before Tesla split, it was up at 1,000. And so then, of course, we've seen the great decline. And now after the split, Tesla at, you know, was a 5-to-1 split, is trading at around 179, having been at 140. So the reason why I bring that up is because it's not really known yet, I think, to the market exactly what is the right value for some of these companies. You know, and we're going to see Nvidia in a couple of weeks. I think it's May 22nd. But we've seen, you know, Google did great. But like you mentioned, AMD did not do so great. I know QCOM went up big yesterday, which of course also helped Apple, and they didn't really mention too much about that association. But the point is that I don't think we really know. And I do believe that it got a little too long in the tooth in terms of the valuations. And so what's a buy opportunity? I'd like to see what happens in Nvidia if it can't get back through, let's say, 865, which was kind of a monthly breakdown number. Maybe it goes down back to 700 or so, and then that's probably more of a fair value. It's not the area that I'm really all that interested in trading right now.
All right, well, let's look at another sector then, one that's been kind of heating up a little bit. It looks like uranium, and people are kind of starting to like this nuclear story a little bit more. How are you trading this?
Well, we got long uranium on the discretionary side of our model because, well, even before the story came out, yes, you know, I know what you just mentioned is true, but there are two other stories that really have impacted uranium. Number one is that it came out that AI actually, AI, that's natural gas. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me switch commodities here. I've got so many commodities in my head. You know, with uranium, it was that Russia was sanctioned and they produced 25% of the uranium. And so if we're sanctioning Russia on uranium, that, of course, is a boost to uranium. And then add what you just said about the potential of nuclear energy. And uranium was a little bit undervalued. So now it's trading over 30 on URA, if you're looking at that. 29 was a really good breakout. And I see no reason why I can't head up closer to maybe 40 before it starts to run into some major resistance.
Talk about drugs here. You know, we talk about an AI bubble, different things. I mean, you know, everyone's getting Lilly's just had a tremendous run here. Amgen comes in today. They're getting into obesity drug as well here. I mean, are these just, you know, taking a look, something like Pfizer is really beat up? Are these just like, just not sexy, just like not the place to be unless you're in, you know, one of the hot rods or Lilly or NVO? What are you looking at in the drug sector?
Well, Amgen, I heard you talking about it, the diet drug. So that's really been my whole theme. I've kind of phrased it as the vanity trade, where the consumer spending habits are shifting from going out and traveling to really more taking care of themselves. And as that trend continues, if these diet drugs become more affordable, because right now they're pretty expensive, and then therefore more mass adaptable, then I think that's going to have a big impact, not just on the drug companies that are really involved, like Novo Nordisk and Amgen and Eli Lilly, but then also some of the other companies that would benefit for people feeling better about themselves. So we've talked a lot about some of the beauty companies or skincare companies I've been watching AbbVie, but AbbVie actually also has come down, which is, I think, is good because it was a little expensive, but around 150, something like that, looks really compelling. So here's the thing. Amgen did great, and you mentioned Pfizer. I felt that Pfizer at $25 kind of bottomed out. It's not a sexy drug company by any means, but it's doing well. And one, now that it's come off, it's gotten all the way up close to what, 28, or even maybe took out 28. That's a nice move for a very quiet company. And it's possible that that would be something that would continue to move, especially if you look at Moderna, which had a huge move after earnings, partly because of the RSV vaccine. So I think there's opportunity there, but like everything else, you have to be somewhat selective with what's the macro theme that's involved with that particular drug company.
All right. Well, let's, you know, kind of stepping back, you know, we got this jobs number this morning. You know, what do you think about what the Fed's doing right now? Do you think it's going to end up ditching its 2% inflation target? Do you think this the fact that they're slowing down the quantitative tightening is a big deal?
You know, that's a great question, because one of the other things that Powell said, and he didn't say it emphatically, but, you know, 2% doesn't seem very tenable at this point. And so it was maybe the first time we've heard the potential that either A, they ignore that target, or B, at some point they say, well, maybe we should be looking more at a 3% inflation target than a 2%, given just the overall growth of everything in the economy. When I say that, I don't mean that the economy is incredibly strong, but it has certainly grown from when they used the measure of 2%. So, you know, I go back and forth. Sometimes I think, oh my God, they are really ignoring this potential inflation rise. Today, the wages came off a little bit. So maybe that's, you know, somewhat of a relief on the inflation narrative. But I think they're going to have to change their minds on that 2% target just based on modern times. So, yeah, I mean, he's so far keeping a cool head in the face of a lot of interesting variables.
Isn't it amazing where how quickly the narrative changes in the market? We are all, you know, hotter than expected CPI and PPI. And then what the heck with the employment cost index? Tell me about the employment cost index, Mish. Did you have that as one of your primary economic indicators as something to keep an eye on? I guess that was the same day that Meta came out. But can the, you know, the narrative just keep changing this, you know, positive, negative, positive, negative, positive, negative? When are we going to get some stability?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the day when all of a sudden the term stagflation was Google searched at a spike for the first time in a really long time. And that was the classic look of stagflation, right? Because you had some shrinking in terms of growth, but then you had the costs going way up. That's classic. And Meta, what Zuckerberg said, I thought was really interesting, in that he said that the costs of doing business and staying competitive are going to rise in order for them to really keep themselves up as a premier company. What, you know, when all of their research with metaverse and AI, they're going to have to spend more money in R&D. So that's exactly goes back to the first point, is where does all of this find valuation in terms of the rates, the costs, the inflation, and valuation? So that employment cost was indicative. And so far, we're still seeing those signs of stagflation. So in terms of stability of the market, perhaps this, like you say, loosening of the QT, maybe the operation twist that comes, maybe even potential a rate reduction as we get into the summer. These are good things and not such good things, because we don't want the Fed to all of a sudden start to flash that they're worried about the economy. Right now, they've been very confident about the economy. So that's why we're not going to see any stability anytime soon. But that doesn't mean we can't see massive rallies, because the retail space loves to pile into this market when it can.
What about small caps, Mish? You're looking at IWM here. What's your take on IWM been kind of still lagging behind the overall market here in 2024?
Yeah, it's for a long time. It's been lagging behind the overall market. And that's why I mentioned it earlier, because with the small caps, again, there are going to be pockets that would find any kind of flattening of the yield curve, so to speak, as a relief, and it might help companies that have been struggling. And also, there's been somewhat of a rotation in the last couple of weeks to value from growth. So that helps our dear granddaddy, IWM. I think if it gets through 200, as scary as that might sound, you've got a pretty good risk. You can even take about a $10 or $15 risk and see if it can't take through that 210 and maybe work its way up to new highs. That could be the sleeper opportunity, but I'm very patient about it.
Yeah, we've been saying that for a long time. Mee Schneider, Chief Strategist at Market Gauge, longtime guest on our show, giving us great input not only on stock, but interest rates and the commodity markets. Mish, thanks for joining us for that number, and we'll be dialing you up again real soon. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, guys. Have a great weekend.
You do the same, Mish. All right, Joel, we got about, 15, 14 minutes left.
I guess people are a little disappointed with my call there. It was a bad number. It was just straight up. There was nothing, there was not a rip and a dip and I guess I can cancel those bids at unchanged on the day. There really wasn't much. They caught the number. They wanted a bad number, right? Unemployment going up. Everything that, the employment cost index, all that stuff that's all in the rearview mirror now. Right now, the market's focused on what they saw. We got the pop, 51.57. When it exceeds my highest number, I don't want to cheat. So I'm still going to be focusing on Monday's high, 51.48.50. We did do the round tripper. We talk about a high for the week being high or low for the week being made on a Friday. Well, folks, you got it there at 51.57. If the bulls can mount a strong bid from here, there's not much resistance. I can show you here on the dailies, the way we came down. This is also halfway back of the entire move. So far, bulls in control here on this Friday morning.
Yeah, and this is, I see a lot of people still talking about stagflation in the chat. This is the first, real sign we've seen so far of a potentially slowing economy. So I would just say, let's wait and see what the inflation numbers look like for the next coming months. Because if, inflation starts going up from here, then okay, then we can start talking about stagflation. But if inflation starts cooling down off a little bit, which I anticipate it will based on the numbers we're seeing now, then I think people are jumping the gun a little bit on calling for the stagflation. But that's enough macro talk, Joel.
Yeah, macro, boring. Let's move on.
Let's get back to some stocks. So we didn't hit, I mentioned it because I yesterday I bought some calls on it, but we didn't get to DraftKings report yet. And kind of similar to Coinbase, where the market knows that first quarter was going to be really strong for Coinbase. If you think about the first quarter for DraftKings, right, you're talking about January, February, March. You're talking about the Super Bowl. You're talking about March Madness. They know they're going to report strong numbers. So I think the bar was set pretty high for DraftKings here. Let me get the numbers pulled up. So we had EPS came in at a positive 3 cents, beat by 14 cents. Sorry, getting a couple different numbers here in Benzinga Pro. Revenue of 1.18 billion, beat by 60 million. Company said it's continuing to explore capital allocation options. It raised revenue and EBITDA guidance. So, always good when you can raise earnings and revenue guidance looking forward, because we talk about how the market cares more about what you're doing in the next quarter than you did the previous. Either way, stock getting a little pop here this morning, trading at $45 a share.
Yeah, let me give a quick technical on this, and then Dennis is back. I want to get his reaction to the number. You're trading at the highs of the pre-market session of 45.12. Well, I'd love to see for UAB, I don't know what your plan is here. I'd love to see it get up to this 45.5 area. That's a triple top from the middle of April. Seems like sellers are stepping out a little bit ahead of that, but that's the prime area, man. 44, 45.5. Just get ready. Boom, sell those calls. Don't worry about being on the offer. Hit the bid. All right, let's bring in Triple D. And Triple D, straight up, man. There was no dip to buy in there.
And again, you know, obviously this is all about rates, and you can look at the TLT, and there was no hiccup here. TLT just went straight up on this number. Your lie detector test is, this is real. Ripped it. We're up a buck on the TLT, which is one of the best moves for the TLT this year. Like, it's been like, seems like it's down every day, you know, like we're leaking. It's a big pop, you know, a pop like we had back at the end of January. It's a big pop. So it's good news for the market. It's telling you that this rally is real. I mean, I always talk about the TLT lie detector test. I think we're a little overshot on the IWM. I mean, we were down and then boom, we rallied 2% just like that on this number. It feels like a little bit of an overshoot. But I think, you know, as we pull in, I think you're going to people find the dip. I don't think it's going to be a day where we turn around and give it all back. I don't think it's this day. Yeah, you know, I might be wrong. So I'm actually looking, you know, at stocks and dips to buy here because gets the bull thesis going again. You know, rates coming down, long-term rates here, and all of a sudden, you know, hey, you know, maybe we could put that back on the table where the Fed could, you know, actually give us a rate cut this year. You know, I'm sure if you look at the odds here by tomorrow, it's going to be a little bit higher there. So that's what the market wants. It needs the Kool-Aid, needs the Kool-Aid spiked, and this gives you a little bit of, you know, possibility that, hey, maybe, you know, interest rates could go down this year.
Harris Roosh in the chat tipped us five Canadian dollars. Dennis, you can take those. the market went up on a negative report. What was the report?
Anything at McDonald's, but go ahead.
So give us the numbers here again, AB. Obviously, are the guests. So, you know, and I'm trading it. So I never even had a chance to fully analyze the numbers, but I know what, you know, when I see the reaction, I already know what the number is. So give me those numbers here once again, and then we'll tell you why.
Yeah. So the U.S. unemployment rate for April was 3.9%. The market was expecting 3.8%. So the unemployment was actually slightly higher than what the street was expecting. And then U.S. average hourly earnings for April grew by 0.2%, and it was expected to grow by 0.3%. So basically what you're seeing is that the, you know, the bad report is that unemployment went higher than expected, but the market's interpreting that as good because they see that as good news for inflation coming down. If the economy is not running as hot, if the labor market isn't running as hot, that should mean that inflation should be coming in a little bit, which has been the primary worry here in 2024, is that the economy has stayed so hot despite higher interest rates, you know, and you know, causing sticky inflation. So that's why the market's interpreting a bad report as actually a good report this morning.
Yeah, and it's all about, you know, what the Fed is going to do. And I mean, if you get where all the labor market is just fine here, you know, why do we need to lower rates? Well, all of a sudden you have some information here ahead. Hey, you know, unemployment's ticking up here now. Maybe, you know, the Fed starts thinking, well, maybe we do need that interest rate cut this year. And this market doesn't care about a recession right now. It's not even thinking. It's not even in the cards. So, and I agree with that. You know, we're not even close to even thinking about that. So we don't have to worry about that. It's a little bit of a bad number. What this market wants is lower rates. This market needs lower rates. Like we talked about solar stocks. I'm sure they're all ripping. I haven't brought them up. But they need lower rates. You know, these stocks have been in the gutter. IWM needs lower rates. You know, it's gone nowhere here. You know, like in the last 2.5 years, we're down. Those stock companies need lower rates. And what we got today was a possibility that, hey, maybe the Fed starts thinking about it again. Not saying lower
stability.
Rates are imminent, but they start thinking about it again.
Stability in rates too. And I think this is, for all the people that
we
been coming on, talking, well, they're high. I mean, come on. I had a mortgage that was at, double digits. Okay. So on a relative basis, you know, rates are still kind of low. I mean,
so I'm going to just take that conversation and throw that out the window, because when you bought a house, Joel, you weren't paying hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, like $500,000 for a home. You know, what'd you buy your first house for? Do you remember? Like, do you remember what you were paying back, you know, in the day? I don't know if you want to give that information.
Yeah,
I'll give the information. You know, like, who cares? So I bought my first house, which is, you know, I bought my first condo. Downtown Windsor, $130,000 bucks, about $100,000. I mean, so when you got a mortgage on $100,000, a big difference than having a mortgage on $500,000. So we can't go back to double digit rates, because nobody, all of a sudden, everybody's losing their homes. So
well, we're not
know, people can afford.
We're not going back down to the race that we learned. There's equilibrium.
But to say, like you were hinting that, you know, this, you know, we've had higher rates before. Why can't we have higher rates now?
I didn't. I said historically, rates
is
are
much
low.
More leveraged yeah. than they were 10 to 20 years ago. Like 30 years ago, you're buying a house, you put 25% down. Did you not, Joel? 25% down? They have put nothing down. You know, like they you know, 5% maybe, you know, like it depends on your bank. So it's just a different world. So we can't, you know, I challenged years ago that we could even go to 5 or 6. So obviously the market has handled that. But yep. but the reason the U.S. economy is not in a recession, the Canadian economy is because, again, the way the banks lend. Banks will lend you 30 years at 3% because they're stupid in the U.S. Stupid. Canadian banks only lend 5 years max. A lot smarter. Canadian banks are going to be in a lot better shape in a couple of years because all of a sudden they've all reset. You know, right now, Canadian banks are still suffering because the reset hasn't happened. But the reset comes because people don't have 30-year fixed mortgages. They don't exist in Canada. So it's just different. They don't exist in most parts of the world, but the U.S., and that's why we had the banking crisis, the regional banking crisis back in March or April, because these stupid banks, lent money for 30 years at 3%. And then you're in a 6% environment and they're all screwed. So that's why rates cannot go up to 8, 9, 10%, because everything comes crashing down and burning. But can rates stay longer? Can rates stay up here? Well, obviously they've handled it so far, so why not? So Joel, you made this point before, higher rates for longer, and you're correct on that point.
All right, let's get back to the earnings reports real quick. We did have Booking Report, which actually is a travel company. Booking reported EPS of $20.39, beat by $6.25. Revenue came in at $4.42 billion, beat by $160 million. So if you're looking for like red herrings in the economy to see when we're slowing down, people are still traveling. People are still buying planes, buying flights, booking hotels, and, you know, stock trading higher this morning by about 4.5%. I do think as, you know, we're seeing unemployment tick higher, you know, we might start to see the economy just cool off a little bit. I think the travel industry is where you'll see it first. I think like in the airlines and the bookings of the world, because I think that's like the easiest thing to cut out when people are trying to actually save money and cut back is saying, okay, I don't need to take that weekend trip. I don't need to go to Vegas with my friends that weekend, you know? So, but either way, Booking, good report here, stock trading higher this morning.
Yeah, big pop here, but way off the highs, Joel.
Oh my gosh, we got to a new all-time high here. We got to 39.22, and you look at that the all-time high was 39.18. I am confident to say that the pre-market high is in there. I will go a triple steak dinner on that. These stocks are hard. I mean, you know, just go to the dailies where we at 36.30. I see three highs in the vicinity of the $3,700 area. Actually, there's another high there from February, but hey, it's Bookings. It's a $35, nearly $4,000 stock. Let's just call that one star resistance at $3,700.
Well, all right. Let's,
you said it perfectly. It's insanity that they bought up to 3,900. Dumb money.
Let's go ahead and we're going
to
do a quick.
I want to just, before you, let's not go to earnings here because there's some important conversations here. Remember, folks, you know, like people are coming here and buying NVIDIA today. I've said this multiple times. You know, the history just repeats itself. They're up 2%. NVIDIA's up more than the IWM. That's dumb because you know what? NVIDIA doesn't need lower rates. IWM does. Why in the hell should NVIDIA be up more than IWM today? I think there's a Paris trade here. Day trades, short day trade. NVIDIA, long IWM, if you wanted to do that. If you think this number, I think NVIDIA could be one that could get some profit taking here. Now, I'm not selling any of my long-term NVIDIA, but saying it for a trading perspective here, there's no reason NVIDIA should trade higher than the IWM today because NVIDIA does not need lower rates.
But I mean, on the flip side of that, Dennis, isn't it that like NVIDIA has been stronger than the IWM? So then you get good news for the overall market lifting it higher. And that, I mean, NVIDIA
data's higher. So you could say that. You could look at all those things. But overall, I would be surprised if Tech outperforms, you know, like I would be very shocked if the Qs are up more, and the Qs are up on Apple. I mean, the Qs are up huge on Apple, but you know, if this, and again, we could reverse, maybe they change their mind, maybe the IWM tanks, you know, they, so nothing is in stone here, but if you're just taking this information at face value, the stocks that go up on this are all those that are so interest rate sensitive. NVIDIA is not one of those.
But even if NVIDIA doesn't need lower interest rates, doesn't it also still benefit from that? And I mean, the stock's trading down 3.5% over the last month, like obviously traded down with AMD and SMCI's earnings. Like, I think people might use the fact that the market's getting a lift here as an excuse to go out and buy NVIDIA because, like, I'd want to be long NVIDIA ahead of its report. And you have an opportunity to do it now on a slight discount versus where in the past few months it's been up every single day. So, but I agree that, you know, small cap stocks like should be the best performers of the day. I just
the beneficiary here. I just don't know why this is day trading. I'm talking day trading too, just because people will say, oh, Dennis is bearish NVIDIA. He sold it all. They'll take that out of context. This is a day trade, folks. I'm just saying on this day, at this moment in time, with the information we've just been given, it's surprising that NVIDIA is ripping on this as much as it is. So
you know,
I don't
Dennis, think... though, you know what, though? It's still like on a relative basis. I mean, compared to what the S&Ps are doing, it's nowhere near the high that it had earlier in the week. So what you're saying is kind of, you know, looking at, you know, being one of the big components on the S&P. So if you want to target in this one, 888.19, that was Tuesday's high. And that's when we had the high in the market. That's still 14 bucks away where the S&P is. So it is bearing out. Also, just an interesting chart, NVIDIA here, you had the all-time high, you had the break, you had that 50% retracement area. I think once you get a sustained 865, 870 bid, then perhaps work our way back up to the $900 area. Quick look at NVIDIA.
All right. Derby talk?
Yeah, let's get to some ponies real quick. We've got some videos queued up. First, we're going to go to the blue.
First, we're going to, before you do the bluegrass here, okay, this is, there's going to be two co-favorites. I don't know if this is going to be a great betting race, but Sierra Leone won the bluegrass here. Not too many winners of the bluegrass. Only 19 total, I believe. And the last winner was Strike the Gold in 1991. So not one of my favorite Derby props. But this horse had one hell of a race in the bluegrass. It was last at one point. It was 8 lengths out at the quarter pole. Ended up winning. Show the end of the bluegrass stakes.
Yep, and I like the two horse in the horse that finished second in this race. We'll talk about that after. Oh, here we go.
Right is third by just a neck. Door Knock is fourth against the rail, just 2 lengths off the lead. Gap of 2 more. BU sneaks up the rail into the fifth position. Good money, sixth on the outside. And is followed by Seize the Gray in seventh. Lat Long is eighth. Mugatu is ninth. And Sierra Leone is last of 10, facing a lot of traffic to deal with.
Last, last 46. Place.
0.48 seconds, the time for that first half mile. Top Connor, the leader. Top Connor leads a length and a half. Just a Touch is second by a length to Epic Ride, who's third a half length. Door Knock is still there and fourth to the inside. And BU is in fifth and still 7 lengths off the lead. Now Sierra Leone is toward the center of the pack, looking toward the outside. 8 lengths to make up. Just over a quarter mile to go. Top Connor is the leader. Epic Ride swings wide. Just a Touch between horses. Door Knock has to shift lanes along with Sierra Leone. That pair out in the center of the track, still 5 lengths off the lead as they move by the eighth pole. Just a Touch has taken the lead from Top Connor. Sierra Leone is running on from the outside. A 16th to go. Sierra Leone comes forward for the lead and deep stretch and wins the Toyota Bluegrass for Tyler Gaffalione. Just a Touch was second. Epic Ride was third. 1:50.08 seconds.
Okay, so the Derby is another eighth of a mile. Okay, another, so that's a longer race. That whole
tire out,
but look where he came from behind. He was last place. He was 8 lengths out at the quarter. So holy mackerel! Okay, so that's going to be one of my favorite. One of the favorites in the race. But this is who I'm going with. I mean, and he's going to be the other favorite. So we're not looking at great prices. A different kind of race. This horse is fierceness, okay? Ran the Florida Derby, and he just, oh, man, he blanked all over the field. Where are we at? Where are we at in this clip for the Florida Derby? Move it up to Hades. He's on top.
Iris's dream and conquest warrior still at the back, but in the clear is Frankie's Empire. They're with the half and 47-2.
This is the horse butt view.
It's fierceness to the far turn on top by a length and a half. Working harder.
Look at him. He's just out there for a stroll.
But he's not. At the rail, it's Conquest Warrior trying to.
This is where the other horses should come at him.
Wide on the course, but Johnny V still sitting pretty on Fierceness, who tries to sneak away. Three quarters, 111-1. They run to the 5/16, and Fierceness, he is getting away. He's now four in front. Catalytic is second. Grandmo the first is third. On the outside, Frankie's Empire. Conquest Warrior at the rail, but they all have too much to do. Fierceness is putting on a show in Hallandale today. Fierceness, the real Fierceness, has showed up to South Florida, and he's crushing them in the Florida Derby. Fierceness geared down and on his way to Louisville. Fierceness, a
Okay, did you see that he never even urged that horse? He never went to the whip. He was just saying, hey, man, we're cashing our check here, and that's what he did. So you know what? Those are going to be the two chalks. If you're looking for long shots, the Santa Anita Derby Stronghold getting no respect at 20-1. They just don't think he's beat very good horses. And then the other long shot, the Louisiana Derby winner, Catching Freedom. He did win at a mile and three teenies here. So two horse race, but you know, 22% of the Derby winners have won, you know, over the last 30 years. So That's a quick analysis. My article is being edited, and that will be out recapping that later on. But I'm looking forward to that and a couple mint juleps.
I'm going more long shots, Joel. I'm going to go Catalytic, which finished second in that race to Fierceness there in Florida. And then I'm going with Just Steel as well, the number six horse, 20-1 and 30-1
okay.
Odds.
You love your odds.
So, yeah, I'm going with the long shots. I think last year Mage was about a 20-1 horse too. So I don't know if that's – is that correct, Joel? Do you remember?
It was a lot. Yeah, it was a long shot. Real quick before we go, Berkshire Hathaway meeting is this weekend. And you know
yep.
what?
Yep.
I know someone that's going.
Who's
my
going?
Nephew. My nephew nice. Hayden is nice. Going.
Be fun.
And he is going to be him and his dad are going. We also there's some family farms out there in Nebraska. They're going to go visit that, and then Hayden's going to come on the show on Monday.
Oh,
and he's
awesome!
And he's going to tell us about the Berkshire Hathaway meeting. So that's it, man. What a jam packed show! I'm going to have to go take a nap here.
All right. Well,
lots going on.
Thank you to everyone who tuned in. Please smash the like if you haven't already. We will have live trading starting up right now. Have a great and safe weekend. We'll see you guys on Monday.